Shastra provides us information on everything that we need to know, both spiritual and material. Why do we need to know anything material at all? Well, we live in this world, and as long as we're in this world, we have to live according to its laws. Just as we were discussing coming in the car now, that when we say, I am 57 years old, the very language puts us in Maya, because I am eternal. But as long as we're in this world, we have to adjust to the conditions of it. Being in a body that's 57 years old, I can't jump around like I did when I was 17 years old. So, in this regard, as I said yesterday, I'm speaking about matters of this world seen through a Krishna conscious perspective. And now I'm going to read from or relate some passage from Mahabharata, in which the topic of punishment is discussed between Draupadi and Yudhishthira. Of course, Yudhishthira, as the king of the world, or supposed to be, has been cheated of his kingdom. For him, it's a major topic, because one of the things that kings do is forgive, but is to punish. But as we shall see from this conversation, it's not only punishment. Punishment, like everything else, has to be administered judicially and not to be too harsh. Punishment is required, Srila Prabhupada narrated, and of course Srila Prabhupada is speaking on the basis of Shastra, that Kshatriyas, they have to go to the forest to hunt. I believe that's been banned recently in England. Fox hunting used to be part of English culture for centuries. Now it's been banned. But Srila Prabhupada said that they should go to hunt. One reason is to cull a number of dangerous animals. Badger culling still goes on in this country. Not that a badger is dangerous, but I don't know exactly why they do it. Something harmful it does to humans. What do they do? They pass on bovine TV to the cattle. They think like that, anyway. But that's one reason that dangerous animals like tigers, lions, and panthers, they cull them so well in India, there are hardly any lions or tigers left. Another reason is that they can be practiced in fighting and killing, because when the time comes, they have to do it. If you're squeamish, you can't do it. You have to do it with humans. This beheading is a big issue in the news right now. The Iraqi state beheading some British and American people, and many others also. And actually, it's going on in Saudi Arabia regularly as a regular function, because the Western countries are friends with Saudi Arabia. They don't make any fuss about that. Hypocrisy is rampant. It's the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. But the Kshatriyas have to be, the king himself, there's a public execution of criminals, the Kshatriya has to do it, not the hangman. So, there's a conversation between Draupadi and Yudhishthira on the subject of punishment and lenience, or punishment and forgiveness. Draupadi seems from Mahabharata, she was more affected than anyone else about the fate of the Pandavas, who are supposed to be the rulers of the world, but instead they're banished to the forest. And she talks about it more than anyone else. She's very upset that it seemed not so much on her own account, but because her husbands, they're all so virtuous and still they have to suffer the suffering is not only the suffering in the forest is not only not having their kingdom and not having the opulence and not having the position, but the humiliation of it all. Yudhishthira is very tolerant and philosophical, but Draupadi, not so much. She's very upset and at the treatment she had, which is why she kept her hair open, which is considered very inauspicious for a woman or a man. Men are supposed to have shikas, but to go around in one's daily life with the hair not tied, ladies, it's very inauspicious, actually. It brings inauspiciousness to oneself and to one's husband and to everyone who sees it. But in modern life, people think it's, what is that stated in Bhagavatam? Lavanya kesha dharanam. In Kali Yuga, people will think by exhibiting their hair, that will be something very beautiful. Anyway, that's not the topic here. The point is that Draupadi brings up conversation. She is trying to incite Yudhishthira. Yeah, forget all this wandering in the forest. Just come on, get your swords and get your bows and go and fight those rascals and take back your kingdom. That's perfectly acceptable for Kshatriyas. This is the point she's making. She spoke about a conversation between Prahlad Maharaj and his grandson, Bali Maharaj, in which Bali asked, he's a king, he has to know all these things, is it better to forgive or to punish? Very important question. And it applies in our lives also, in everyone's life. Prahlad Maharaj said, neither forgiveness or force to punish, neither of them are applicable in all circumstances. One has to judge the situation. If someone always forgives, then people won't take him seriously and they'll just take advantage of it. You may remember reading in Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada talks about the snake who became a disciple of Narad Muni. You remember reading that? You should read Bhagavatam. But then he said that now that everyone knows I'm a devotee, the children throw stones at me, they're not scared of me. So Narad said, well, just show your hood and pretend that you're being nasty, but don't actually bite. So if one's always lenient and let everyone do what they say, then one's servants in Vedic culture, people have servants, higher class people. They won't listen to what you say. They'll disrespect you. That Chanakya Pandit talks about servants who answer back. They challenge their master. It's a very inauspicious household. And one's dependents, that means that juniors, children, and others, if they don't respect you, one's enemies and even anyone will just disrespect you. That's the way of the world. Trunadapi suni chena. We know the verse, but if we're simply all that in practical terms, I mean, we study mostly Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, but Srila Prabhupada also, he taught, as he had learned in his youth, from Chanakya Niti, which is how to live practically in the world. Vaishnava is very humble, but to live in this world, he may have to show some, not just allow it. Humility in which one allows others to take advantage of him, that's all right for a Paramahamsa. But for one who has to live as a Grihastha especially, you can't just let people take. You have a responsibility to your family and to society. So you have to
not just let people do whatever they like with you in the name of being humble.
Otherwise, your servants or anyone will just, in the name of, they'll come and steal everything from you. They won't. One who has servants supposed to tell them, do this, do that. They won't do it. This is all I'm what Prahlad is telling Bali, and I'm adding some commentary. I almost said Coventry. So adding some commentary as we always go. And one's children and others who are supposed to be controlled and guided, the women, the father is supposed to be the guru of the family, which means he has some control. He's shisha, means he takes shashan, takes discipline. Yeah, okay, do it. Hare Krishna. Do it after the class for the rest. Let's listen. Listening function should go on. Then they also won't respect, and then even good advice, what the father is supposed to say or what the king is supposed to control the citizens, they won't take it seriously. And as a result, they'll become fallen and degraded. So to in the name of humility, if one does not control those who one is supposed to control, then those whom one is supposed to control for their benefit, they'll just become loose and free and do whatever they like, and they will go to hell. And you'll go to hell too for not having properly instructed them. But on the other hand, one who just goes on punishing, is very harsh and never forgives even small offenses, such a person, no one will like him, and everyone will try to avoid him, and they'll speak behind his back. They'll be afraid of him in front, but behind his back they'll talk badly about him, and they may even plot to kill him. So we see that in the case of Charnakya also. He plotted to kill the king, which is considered a great sin, but in the case of that king, that was Nanda, I believe his name was, he had him removed and had this Chandragupta installed instead. Because the rightful king, according to inheritance, was such a bad king that Charnakya had him removed. So one symptom of a bad king is that he can't control anything. And another type of bad king is that he's so harsh and so strict. Vena is described in the Bhagavatam. He was so strict and so harsh that the brahmanas, they removed him. But then there was no king, and then it became chaos. So neither situation is very good. Therefore, Prahlad recommends forgiveness and punishment, or lenience and punishment, must both be utilized. So one has to be a judge of time, place, and circumstance. And Prahlad gives an idea of which person should be forgiven. One who has served well in the past, if they make some mistake, well, you can forgive it because they've done so many good things in the past. That also has to be seen judiciously. Just like in our society, how much do we apply this? If someone's done very good service in the past, but they do something bad, all right, we can forgive. But then if they do something extremely bad, just like there's one initiated devotee in South India who did, everyone was praising, he did great service, and then he falsified all the records and said that this temple is actually in the name of another society, not under Bombay ISKCON, you know who I'm talking about, and stole the whole property. Should you forgive such a person? Should you let him get away with it because he did good service in the past? So again, we have to see if someone does something minor or even possibly major,
you can forgive. Not if they go on and on doing bad things. I'll get back to that later. So one who has served well in the past, we can overlook some minor infringements. Overlook means if they go on doing it, you should instruct them. But some small thing, we don't make such a big issue of it, says Prahlad. One who offends out of ignorance or foolishness. And again, they should be instructed. You shouldn't do this. If they continue to do it, then they're not in ignorance, and then they become an offender. But a first-time offender, we can forgive. That's generally accepted in the law in this country and in many other countries. A first-time offender may be forgiven. Srila Prabhupada gave the example that he himself was called to court once during his business life as a grihastha for he had a license to produce alcohol for pharmaceutical purposes, and his manager was using the facility to manufacture it and sell it for non-pharmaceutical purposes. So Srila Prabhupada was charged and taken to court, and he said, Srila Prabhupada said, I said to the judge that yes, I must take responsibility because I'm the owner of the company, but my manager did it without my knowledge, and I'll be more strict and make sure it doesn't happen again in future. And immediately they dismissed the case. But if they found out it was going on, then the next time he wouldn't be dismissed so easily and might be charged. Srila Prabhupada gave that example. In addition, sometimes a person may be forgiven, Prahlad says, as a PR job. Because the king, he may forgive someone, just someone may be very popular, he's done something wrong which he should be punished for, but the king may forgive him as a political expedient. It's all very, it's very tricky being a leader. How to deal with each situation. The king is to be Naranam Chandaradhipam, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that the king is my representative. But especially in Kali Yuga, it's not such an easy thing. In fact, the institution of monarchy is abolished all over the world, although they have in this country and a few other countries, they have a show bottle monarchy, or just a show of monarchy, but no real monarchy, because of the misuse of it. It's very, very difficult to balance who is that said that you can fool all the people, but you can't satisfy everyone all the time. It's Lord Ramachandra could. Otherwise, it's very difficult to satisfy. I guess even if there were any thieves or rogues in Ayodhya, they're all very pious people. But with the exception of that person who complained about Rama, about him being indulgent to his wife. But thieves and rogues just couldn't exist in the kingdom of Rama. So Prahlad also says certain persons should never be forgiven. They should always be punished. One who knowingly offends and claims to be innocent. He deliberately did something wrong, and when he's exposed, he denies it. That person should never be let off without punishment. And a repeated offender, even if the offense is slight. So it doesn't mean that someone who repeatedly does something slight wrong should be punished very severely, but you just can't let them going on doing wrong again and again and again, even if it's slight, because that's the job of a king, to keep things in order. So Yudhishthira, in response, because remember Draupadi's trying to incite him to punish Duryodhan and company. He doesn't refute the conclusions of Prahlad. He wouldn't do that. But he gives another perspective.
he says that why, although lenience and forgiveness may not be appropriate in all circumstances, he says that one should tend to be lenient rather than to punish. That should be the tendency. He said that unless we stress the principle of forgiveness, unless we're always cognizant that we have to be forgiving, that is the quality of forgiveness, then anyone could just come in and say anything and it would be punished. That someone can come with some imagined or offense and they complain against someone and immediately the punishment will come. But rather, one has to, Yudhishthira's point is that one should be level-headed and just try and see. I know myself that often devotees come to me and complain about someone. I listen and then they say, okay, now what? They expect me to do something. I say, I can't do anything without hearing the other side of the story. However bad it may seem, there are always extenuating circumstances. And often we find that someone will tell the person who's accused, you'll find that they have a completely different story or perspective. Or maybe not. They may be wrong and they may need to be corrected. But if one has the tendency to, Yudhishthira's point is that if one has the tendency to punish rather than the tendency to be fair and see the good in others, then you become so stern that one cannot dispense justice properly. We're talking here about justice. That's the great point. And that by making this harsh atmosphere, then the citizens would also become harsh and deal with each other very roughly. I remember a period in ISKCON where there was, this was in the early 1980s, and there was a harsh atmosphere. And I must admit, I became very much affected by that also. The idea that the leaders should be very heavy, and it made a very uncomfortable atmosphere within, I can't say the whole of ISKCON, but certainly in a lot of it. So that there's a lot of discipline, strong discipline. And of course, discipline is, again, time, place, and circumstance. Brahmanas are to be disciplined by shastric injunctions. Okay, now I'm going to discipline you. It seems you don't know that Srila Prabhupada said on several occasions that when the class is going on, the curtains open or close, you can just go on listening. Worship Krishna by hearing. That's why I'm writing books. All these points, devotees don't know many of them. So there would always be, and that would create an atmosphere in which there'd be, if it was a very harsh atmosphere, then there's a lot of fighting, either verbally or maybe even physically, and then the whole society becomes disturbed and can lead to ruination just internally. We can be our own worst enemies. Yudhishthira said that it's only due to this divine quality of forgiveness that there can be peace and prosperity. Live and let live. Something like that. He said that forgiveness is a quality that keeps men civilized. Unless there's forgiveness, then it's just like jungle animals who are fighting with each other. And then he talks about anger, because he gives the idea that this tendency to want to punish others
it comes from anger or the spirit of nastiness. Anger, we know in Bhagavad Gita, kama esha, krodha esha, rajoguna samadbhava. Anger is born of lust, and they both come from the mode of passion. So, anger, when one becomes angry, one loses one's sense of discrimination. It destroys the intelligence. Jnanam avritya dehinam. Krishna says that this lust, karma, which transforms into anger, it covers the intelligence or the knowledge of the living being. And uncontrolled anger always leads, it always makes a problem. It never solves any problem. Whereas just suppressing that, not allowing oneself to grow angry, then a better situation is created in which people can live peacefully and happily and prosperously. So self-control, beginning with control of anger, that is required. Otherwise, society cannot be civilized, cannot be peaceful, cannot be prosperous. That's another major duty of the king, that prosperity. He has to see that the country is not only peaceful, but that there's prosperity, that enough food and all the items. The king is supposed to manage the society in that regard. So Yudhishthira is talking a lot here about prosperity. Otherwise, if everyone's all uptight all the time, then no one will be peaceful, no one will be happy, and everyone will always be on each other's case, and it just saps the whole energy. Of course, I'm putting it in somewhat modern terms. It's not exactly the language of Mahabharata. So, strength. The Kshatriya is supposed to be strong, but the Kshatriya is not some nasty Rambo figure or terrorist or something like this, but his strength must be guided by intelligence and not by blind passion. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, balang balavatang chaham kama raga vivarjitam. Krishna says, I am the strength of the strong, which is devoid of material desire and attachment. So it's not just strength. A kshatriya is not just some big boxer type of figure, but he's guided by dharma, actually. With superior knowledge, you see, Yudhishthira, he was not only practicing all the Pandavas, they weren't only practicing how to fight, but they also heard from the rishis. They took knowledge of dharma. So Yudhishthira said that with superior knowledge, one should conquer anger, not be conquered by anger. And again, by anger, we don't necessarily... Well, we're talking about... uncontrolled anger by which one punishes others. But it can also mean the anger and desire, karma, they're intimately linked. So again, one should control the lower self by the higher self. That's the point. When a person becomes controlled by anger, he can do the most horrible things. You can just kill his own son or vice versa, just without thinking. To lose your temper, that's the English term, isn't it? To lose your temper. You lose it. You lose self-control. Considering this, Yudhishthira said, a wise man carefully controls his anger. Now, it's interesting that Yudhishthira, he takes the discussion away from the topic of punishment and forgiveness and concentrates on the topic of anger. He goes to the underlying principle, this desire to punish others. If one actually desires to punish others, maybe by practice you desire to punish others, you become something like a Yamaduta or something. They actually take pleasure in giving pain to others. It is the king's duty to punish others, but it's not that he's relishing that now I have to inflict on some kind of pain on someone, either physical pain or by imprisoning is one kind of pain, or making them unhappy. So one should not cultivate such a spirit. One's spirit should be rather to give pleasure to others. Punishment must be given in certain circumstances, but one should not relish the prospect of doing so. That tendency to do so, to indulge in anger, Yudhishthira says, is very bad. Because then, yeah, that means if one is under the influence of anger, either when one loses one's temper, or if one's whole temperament is like that, that means that one's intelligence is not clear. And one will always lean towards that one will have an angry temperament, and it means that you can just get angry at any moment. And it's very unpleasant and not good or auspicious for anyone. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Trivitam narakasya idam dwaram nashanam atmanaha kama krodas tatha lobas tasmat etat trayam tyajet. Lust, greed, and anger as three gates to hell, which therefore should be given up. So Yudhishthira is making this point. Excessive punishment is sinful. Srila Prabhupada makes that point in a purport when he's talking about Parashuram. And Parashuram is praised as the incarnation of God, Keshava Dhrita, Bhrigupati Rupa, Jai Jagadisha Hare, who kills the Kshatriyas 21 times. But his campaign in doing that was incited by the sin of one person, Kartavirya Arjuna. And then afterwards, he did atonement by at Samanta Panchak in Kurukshetra. So Srila Prabhupada comments that excessive punishment is sinful. To punish someone may be required, but to do so excessively actually becomes sinful. Now, punishment can be good, can be divine. Krishna himself, what does he do? Paritranaya sadunam. He delivers the devotees. How? By vinashayata dushkritam. So, punishment is laudable in many cases. But Yudhishthira is mentioning that although that's laudable for a kshatriya, the tendency to forgive is more of a divine quality. Some quotes from Srila Prabhupada in this regard. We should learn to forget and forgive minor incidents, because whenever there are two men in a place, there is always some misunderstanding. Such misunderstanding happens even between husband and wife. What to speak of others? But we have to adjust things on the basis of Krishna consciousness. Another quote from Srila Prabhupada. Kshama means forgiveness. Kshama rupam tapasvinaha. People are advised, especially those who are following penance and austerity, yogic principles or devotional life, they should learn to excuse. In our dealings, there are so many faulty dealings between ourselves. So if we take everything very seriously, then it is very difficult to live. Practical advice. Srila Prabhupada quotes, Kshama rupam tapasvinaha.
Those who are tapasvis, they perform austerities, they should be forgiving, because they, it seems they often have the tendency to become very angry. Durvasa Muni is a prime example, because they have they're depriving their samsams from sense gratification, but if they're not getting a higher taste, then the tendency is to become quite irritable. And if one doesn't eat or sleep sufficiently, one may become irritable. So, sadhus, they may be angry by nature. I remember once, something popped into my mind now from 30 years back in Bangladesh, that one of our devotees, he was a brahmachari, and he had an irritable nature. So he was with some people visiting our temple, grihasthas, and he was he was angry with them, over the top. And one woman just said to another one, she said, "Oh, brahmachari," as if that's the explanation. And surprise, surprise, he didn't remain a brahmachari very long. He had an angry nature as a brahmachari, because he's suppressing desires, and it comes out like that. That's the understanding. So if punishment, if it is administered, that should be with a desire to improve the punished person, to rectify them, or it may be in the case that they're not rectifiable. Achikitsya, that term Jiva Goswami uses for certain Prakriti Sahajiyas, unrectifiable. But then they should be punished so to restrict them from doing harm to others and themselves also, because by their wrong activities they accumulate more and more bad karmic reactions. So it should be for the everything that a pious person does should be, or a saintly person does, should be for the benefit of others. So even punishment should be administered in that spirit. Just like a child is punished by the parents. Not that the parents, when they want to do harm to the child, they punish. Of course, I think by law you're not supposed to punish nowadays. The whole modern world is insane. But the child is punished by the parents for the benefit of the child, so that the child can grow up to be a good person and not a rascal. Otherwise, if the child is not disciplined, then they just grow up to be a rascal. What about in devotional service? Does a guru punish his disciples? Or do we punish devotees? We could tell them that, okay, now you have to cut the potatoes for 10 days. Well, is that a punishment? In the army, that was used to be a punishment, that if you do something wrong, if a private does something wrong, then he gets put in the kitchen and has to cut potatoes for 200 people or something like that. But it's not really a punishment. It's difficult to punish a devotee like that, because that's devotional service. So, oh, very good, thank you very much. Or you could say, okay, so did something wrong? All right, then you're not, you can't come, we're going on a yatra, we're going to visit all the holy places. But that's not good, because that would impede his devotional advancement. Not giving him... Then don't give him Mahaprasad for a week. Just give him only rice and salt. Well, actually Prabhupada said something like that. He said, for those who don't go to Mangalarti, they should take no prasadam in the morning. He said that if they're too sick, usually that's the excuse. If they're too sick to go to Mangalarti, they're too sick to eat. On another occasion, he said, they can distribute one Krishna book. That will be their penalty. But it's not really punishing. What would be a punishment is to take a devotee's service away from him. But we don't want to do that. That you have this service. All right, now you don't do it. Well, sometimes that may be required. If a devotee is doing a service, but he's misusing that position, or he's not fit for that position. But again, it's not really in the spirit of punishing, but rather one of rectifying. Well, punishment is meant for rectification. Rupa Goswami punished Jiva Goswami. You may remember. The one scholar had come to Vrindavan, and Rupa Goswami was very famous as a highly learned, and the scholars, they wanted to get a certificate to show that they're more learned than others. So he said to Rupa Goswami, "I want to debate with you and defeat you." And Rupa Goswami said, "Don't bother debating. I'll just sign that you've defeated me." So he signed it. And Jiva Goswami, who was much younger, he was the nephew, he came to hear about this and he said, "Hey, now you debate with me." And Jiva Goswami trounced him in debate. And in this way, the scholar who wanted to go outside said, "I defeated Rupa Goswami." He was humiliated. Rupa Goswami came to know about this and he banished Jiva Goswami. He said, "Get out from here. This, you're proud, the pride of a scholar." So he said, "You go, God, get outside Vrindavan." So he's banished from the association of devotees. Sanatana Goswami came to know about this, and he went to Rupa. After this was some time, Jiva Goswami was staying outside the boundary of Vrindavan, fasting. He was distraught. No more association of his guru, Rupa Goswami. Sanatana Goswami went to Rupa and said that you're supposed to be kind to all jivas. So this is Jiva. You're not being kind. You have to let him back. So Rupa said to Rupa Goswami was junior to Sanatana Goswami, so he had this. But that was seemed like some kind of punishment. That's some leela between very high devotees. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Damodar Pandit, he would be on everyone's case for any little thing they did wrong. He was an associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Puri. And when he criticized Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself for something that Damodar Pandit saw as wrong, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu praised him. He said, "Actually, you're my best friend because you're making sure that I don't do anything wrong. But I think it's a good idea if you went to Bengal." He sent him away. But that was for some service also. He was getting too much, even for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. "You go to Bengal and give news of myself to my mother." So in this way, punishment, but maybe a little bit like a punishment. Jagadananda Pandit, he went to Bengal and he brought beautiful oil for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to put on his Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's head. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wouldn't accept it. He said, "This is not for a sannyasi." Jagadananda became very upset. And then Jagadananda, he wanted to go to... He wanted to go to Vrindavan. He was becoming so tense between himself and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he went to Vrindavan and he saw Sanatana Goswami, who's much superior to him, with a red cloth on his head. And he thought, "Oh, that our Prabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, must have given that to you." He said, no, it's some other sannyasi, Mukunda Saraswati. And Jagadananda, he was cooking at the time. He had picked up a cooking pot and he wanted to crack it on Sanatana Goswami's head for honoring a sannyasi other than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is leela. I don't recommend that you attempt to crack pots on, or crack devotees' heads with cooking pots. Kala Krishnadas was with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He ran away to chasing after some women. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took his assistants all the way up to back to Puri, and when he got back to Puri, he told the other devotees, look, you gave this man to assist me, he misused his position, I'm throwing him out. I don't want to see him anymore. He banished him from his association. But the devotees were very merciful, and they engaged him also for going to Bengal. The punishment of Chota Haridas for something which seemed extremely minor, not exactly an exhibition of lust, but maybe something like that. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected him. You can't, you don't come in, don't allow him to come and see me. And Haridas committed suicide. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu got the news, he said, Swakarma phala bhukpuman. Everyone has to take the results of their activities. Seemed to be very harsh. But why did he do that? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to establish strict standards for renunciants. Otherwise people will miss... If in the presence of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, someone who's supposed to be a renunciant is loose in his behavior with women, then the whole sampradaya will go to hell. And in the name of renunciation, people will misuse the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So there's a case of severe punishment that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave. He would banish people from his company. But then the devotees would accommodate them. In the case of Chota Haridas, he committed suicide. It was too much for him. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he knew that. Srila Prabhupada was much more lenient. When he was asked about this, about the punishment of Chota Haridas, what should the Prabhupada sannyasis do? Prabhupada said that, no, they shouldn't commit suicide. He said, I can't be as strict as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I need people to work with me and help me. If we were so strict, then we would have no one could stay. Can't be. Prabhupada was pragmatic in that regard. Prabhupada, his punishment was usually done with sharp words, and they were sharp. We often think of Prabhupada nowadays as a nice, something like a nice old grandfather, but actually he was extremely intense. And not many devotees could stay with. You might think that, well, I'd like to be with Prabhupada all the time, but there were very few devotees who could stay with Prabhupada because he was intense. He was very strong. He himself worked day and night. His servants were on call 24 hours a day. They had to travel intensely, and they weren't allowed to have jet lag. They were just expected to go on with their service as if they hadn't just traveled for the last 12 hours or whatever, flown from one side of the world. So it was very intense to be with Srila Prabhupada, and he often would chastise very strongly, even for small things. So that was, but again, it's not really punishment, it's rectification, training. And unless a guru tells a disciple, do this, don't do this, then where's the training? And then what's the point of having a guru-disciple relationship at all? The training must be there. And we can expect that the disciple won't like to hear everything, because that's why he's a disciple, because he needs to be changed from his bad habits. So, whatever a devotee does, if he punishes or curses, it's all for the benefit of others. That should be understood. It shouldn't be that, oh, my guru's too heavy, forget it, I'm going to find a better guru who lets me do whatever I like. Then you don't need a guru. Yeah. You should understand, it's all beneficial. Srila Prabhupada, it must have been very heavy. In our movement, among the disciples of Srila Prabhupada, maybe the one who is consistently the most heavy disciple was Tamal Krishna Goswami. And Prabhupada punished him very heavily. You could say punished, as we're on the topic of punishment. That he had developed this tremendous party of Radha Damodar Sankirtan party, with distributing many books, making many devotees. But in doing so, he also upset many of the temple presidents in America. One thing was that they were mostly grihasthas, the town presidents. He would take away all their brahmacharis and tell them, "Oh, these grihasthas, they're all in Maya. Come and join us for your own spiritual advancement." And then they would go in cities where the devotees were, they had temples, they were distributing books, and they'd just scorch through the place and collect by any means and burn out the preaching field. And there was a lot of discontent about all this. And Srila Prabhupada told Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he removed him from America and said, "Now you go and preach in China." And that time, you couldn't go to China. There was no way that an American citizen could go to China. Prabhupada told him, you make this your preaching field. So it might have seemed like a punishment, but Tamal Krishna Maharaj took it in good spirit and took it as, "This is Prabhupada's mercy on me." And as a result, he pioneered the preaching in China. Hare Krishna. To be continued at some point in time. Well, what are we going to do now? We're going to take... All right. But the thing is, I haven't finished, so what you might be asking about might be answered in the upcoming section. What is it?
I was going to say, because I've been involved in managing the temple for the last 20 years or so with my father and Philip, and we've noticed that from 20 years ago till now, the appetite for people being correct, or not even punished, just simply being correct.
Yeah, just so told you can't do this.
And it seems to be progressively getting significant.
Well, the atmosphere within our movement of not accepting correction. That's another whole big topic. It's a very big topic, which I have spoken about, but on many occasions. But there's the principle of bringing many people in, and then the principle of bringing people up. In fact, I plan to speak about this on in a class on the manor on Saturday. So I want to speak on this in some detail, actually, on this very point.
Are your lectures available on the internet?
Yeah, it should be on the internet also. Too much to deal with just now. So... Definitely, yeah.
All temple managers have a problem on their hands trying to manage people interactions. And we are looking to expand the movement.
You can't expand the movement with devotees who are extremely neophyte.
Yeah.
Or if you expand, you'll just get more and more neophyte devotees and more headaches.
Yes.
The disciple means discipline. But people mostly want gurus who don't discipline.
Exactly.
They're cheating themselves.
Yes, they want guru to rubber stamp
everything. Yeah.
And I think, like you said in your class, that people think Srila Prabhupada was a nice grandfather.
Srila Prabhupada has been converted in people's imagination into some smiling old grandfather who pats everyone on the head, which is nonsense. Saturday. It might be live. Does Bhaktivedanta Manor have live internet broadcast?
Yes.
Okay, so we'll finish for now. Hare Krishna.